Magandang araw, Podmates! Howie Severino muli na nagpapaalala na nakakatalino ang mahabang attention span. Ang guest natin ngayon ay ang isa sa pinakamalakas na boses na nagtatanggol ng ating teritoryo sa West Philippine Sea na inaangkin ng China. Ang former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. Magandang araw sa inyo, Justice Carpio. Thank you for joining us.
Magandang araw, Howie. Magandang araw sa ating mga viewers.
Sir, you know, even before you retired as Supreme Court Justice, you had made the defense of our maritime territory against China one of your chief causes, if not your main one, no? Why did you decide to devote a large part of your time, resources, and thinking to this issue? And corollary to that, sir, was there a tipping point for you when you decided, you know, I need to spend much or most of my time on this?
Yeah, well, it goes back to 1995 and early 1996 when China seized Mischief Reef. I was then with President Fidel V. Ramos as his chief presidential legal counsel in Malacanang. And we were really like a headless chicken at the time because we couldn't do anything. We didn't know what to do. We already ratified UNCLOS at the time, but China had not ratified the UNCLOS, so we could not sue China before an UNCLOS tribunal. And the U.S. had just left. We kicked them out in 1992. So there was a power vacuum in the South China Sea. Of course, if there's a power vacuum, the next power will come in, will rush in, and China rushed in and seized Mischief Reef. And we didn't know how to respond because, militarily, we were much weaker. And legally, there was no avenue. There was no tribunal where we could go. And that really struck a deep chord in my mind because we were losing our maritime zone and yet we couldn't do anything. So ever since, I've tried to think about it and to think how we can defend ourselves in the future against Chinese expansion because I knew it was not the last seizure of our maritime zone by China in at the time they would seize more of our maritime zones. I had the opportunity when the new baselines law was brought to the Supreme Court. It was challenged. The constitutionality was challenged by some professors, including Harry Roque, and I decided that case. And I saw there that we could defend legally our maritime zones by going to UNCLOS, but we had to first comply with the requirements of UNCLOS as to our baselines, because if we go to an UNCLOS tribunal and challenge China's illegal baselines, the 9-dash line, China will say, oh, you have also your illegal baselines, you have also your, you're treating the Treaty of Paris lines as your baselines. So we had to put our house in order before we could bring a case against China because of the principle in international law that he who comes to court must come with clean hands. I mean, if you go to court, you cannot accuse somebody of an illegal act which you yourself is guilty of. So that's also a principle in domestic law. So I thought that if we become compliant with UNCLOS, then we could bring China to an UNCLOS tribunal. That's how it started.
Okay, so you said that your keen interest began in 1995, you know, with the Chinese occupation of Mischief Reef. That's almost 20 years ago, no? And you have said that this is an intergenerational struggle that future generations will inherit, no? So it's not going to end soon, no? So you've been devoted to this cause for almost 20 years, but you say this is going to stretch far into the future. On the other hand, some have also said that China can really make this quick and dirty with a short, sharp war that would basically end our opposition, no? What do you think of that scenario? Kumbaga, it might actually end with this generation. Isn't there a great risk now of a sudden escalation that would permanently drive us out of these disputed territories?
Well, the last thing that China would want to do is to give the U.S. an opportunity to intervene by engaging an armed attack on the Philippines or on Philippine public vessels now. Because then we could invoke the Mutual Defense Treaty, and then China will be confronted not with a weak military power like the Philippines, but with a nuclear armed power, which is, China has about 450 nuclear bombs. The U.S. is about 5,500. In a nuclear war, not a single Chinese would remain alive in mainland. They would be totally destroyed. So there is this doctrine of China, the three warfares doctrine, which they have approved. Now, all the way from the People's Congress to the Politburo to the Military Commission, it says that China will win the South China Sea without firing a single shot. They will win the South China Sea without firing a single shot. First warfare is the PR warfare. So China is saying they own the South China Sea since 2,000 years ago. We have blunted that warfare because we have exposed that the nine dash line is a fake claim that was ruled upon by the tribunal at The Hague that there's no historical basis for the nine dash line. Second warfare of China is illegal warfare. China is saying that they are exempt from UNCLOS because the nine dash line stretches back to 2,000 years ago, but that has been debunked also by the tribunal. The third warfare of China is they will intimidate all the other claimant states with their huge air and naval bases in the Spratlys, with their huge naval fleet. They have the largest naval fleet in the world, with their numerous fighter jets and bombers, and by their huge coast guard, the largest coast guard in the world. So they will intimidate everybody. And if you are dumb enough to be intimidated, you lose. Like Duterte, he said, we cannot fight China because it will be a massacre. I mean, if you have that mindset, then you lose. Because under the three warfare strategy of China, that's precisely what they want, to intimidate you. And if you get intimidated, you lose. So in all these three warfares of China, they avoid at all costs a war, a shooting war, because a small skirmish, if it's an armed skirmish, it would escalate into a nuclear war, especially if the Philippines is involved, because we have a mutual defense treaty. So all the China is doing is to intimidate us by their huge air and naval bases, by their water cannon, by their laser weapons, but they will not use an armed attack because that will draw the Americans in, and if the Americans are in, then they're in a great peril because they, as of this time, they are still no match of the Americans. So that's why they are doing an intimidation just to intimidate us. So we should understand the three warfare strategy of China.
So you sound quite confident in the U.S. commitment to our defense as a deterrent, no, to an all-out war by China, no. But so far, no, are you satisfied with the U.S. response to what China has been doing? Because China has not exactly been passive, no. Yung nabanggit niyo yung pagwa-water cannon, no. I mean, from there, it's fairly easy to imagine some accidental gunshot that will spiral out of control. And wars have started that way, di ba? With a single gunshot. World War I started that way, di ba? So do you think that the U.S. will really come to our defense?
Well, a single gunshot will not really start a war because there is a principle of proportionality. You can invoke self-defense if you are subjected to armed attack, but there is a principle of reciprocity. If there's only one single gunshot, then you cannot really use all your cruise missiles, all your torpedoes. I mean, it should be proportional. There is that proportionality. That's precisely to avoid any accidental war. You must exercise proportionality in your response. So it has to be a real armed attack. I mean, intentional. Those small skirmishes arising from accidents that can be resolved by being circumspect about your response, because there is the principle of proportionality under international law. Let's say the Chinese will say, okay, one option is for us to attack the Philippine Navy in Ayungin Shoal or in Scarborough Shoal. So then the Philippines will invoke the Mutual Defense Treaty. What will be the response of the U.S.? First, if the U.S. responds by attacking us also, then that would be against their three warfare strategy. They don't want a war with the U.S. So that's a no-no for them if the U.S. responds. Now, if the U.S. does not honor the treaty, the U.S. says, oh, we will not honor the treaty, then what will happen? What will happen is that Japan, Korea will start to doubt the U.S. commitment. And Japan and Korea will be forced to go nuclear. There will be a great debate in Japan. In Korea, it will be easily, it's an easy decision because an overwhelming majority of South Koreans now want to go nuclear already. So what will happen is that China will be surrounded by nations that are hostile but with nuclear weapons. You have Russia, you have, if South Korea will turn nuclear, you have Japan, and you have Australia will go nuclear for sure if the U.S. Will not honor its commitment because Australia will have to defend itself. So you have all countries, you have India also, nuclear arms. So China will be surrounded on all sides by nuclear armed states that are hostile to China. So it is in the national interest of China not to force the U.S. to give up the nuclear umbrella, because then all these nations will go nuclear, and that will be a worse nightmare for China. So if I'm the strategist in Beijing, I'm looking at it, I will not do anything that will make the U.S. decide whether to honor the treaty or not, because either way, it will be bad for China. So if you look at it that way, all those protected by that nuclear umbrella will go nuclear, because that is an existentialist threat. That's a matter of existence, national survival for them. So that's why for the Chinese, they want to control the South China Sea without firing a single shot, because that's easier for them.
Okay, well, so far, no, we filed more than 100 diplomatic protests against China because of their actions in the West Philippine Sea. For those of our listeners who are not very aware of the implications of this kind of protest, ano po yung diplomatic protest and how can this be effective?
Well, first of all, it is a must that a country must file a diplomatic protest, because if your sovereignty is infringed, if your maritime zones are infringed, and you do not act, you do not say anything, then that can be taken as acquiescence, implied consent. And if that issue goes to an UNCLOS tribunal, the tribunal will say, oh, you acquiesced, you impliedly consented, you cannot complain now. And that's what exactly raised in The Hague. In our arbitration, The Hague, one of the issues raised was, did we acquiesce to the 9-line? And we presented all our protests, all our notes verbal ever since, hundreds of them way back in the 90s. And the tribunal said, no, there are sufficient protests made by the Philippines way back in the 90s. And that is the importance of a note verbal, because we stop ourselves from being trapped in that principle that if you do not protest to an infringement on your sovereignty or sovereign rights, you are deemed to have impliedly consented. Okay, so there's a value in itself to protest. We must keep on protesting. Beyond that, we have to do something. Like, for example, we must have joint patrols with the U.S. Because a joint patrol in the West Philippine Sea, for me, is the strongest action that we can take to enforce the arbitral award, rather. Because if the Philippines and the U.S. conduct a joint patrol, both of them are telling China that these are not your waters. This belongs to the Philippines. It's part of the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines. That's why we can conduct naval drills there. Because in the exclusive economic zone under UNCLOS, countries conduct naval drills. And China said, you cannot conduct naval drills because that's within the 9-line. But we do that. And the more we do that, the more we enforce the arbitral award.
Okay, well, despite these alliances and, you know, our victory in international tribunal, no, for the last several years, China has been building all kinds of infrastructure already, you know, in the disputed areas and reefs as if they own it, no? From runways and bases, outposts, and there's a growing population of Chinese people based there, assigned there. Is there a scenario where we can still reclaim those areas and occupy them for ourselves and the Chinese will leave? What's the best scenario for us?
Well, first of all, I've been saying this since late last year that we should challenge China to submit the territorial dispute, because we're talking now of the territorial dispute. The maritime dispute has been settled legally. We have a full exclusive economic zone in the West Philippine Sea. But the territorial dispute was not part of the ruling of the UNCLOS Tribunal, because UNCLOS does not regulate territorial disputes. There is no convention or treaty regulating territorial disputes. So China and the Philippines and the rest of the claimant states must submit voluntarily the territorial dispute to voluntary arbitration by the International Court of Justice. But that has not happened yet. I am now asking the government to challenge China to submit the territorial dispute to voluntary arbitration. We challenge China, Vietnam, Malaysia, and Brunei to submit the territorial dispute to voluntary arbitration, because the UN Charter says all disputes must be settled peacefully by negotiation, mediation, or finally by arbitration. And we are just following the UN Charter. So we should challenge China. If China does not agree, then we will present all our evidence before the world. We will tell the world that these are the evidences of the Philippines on why we have sovereignty over these disputed islands, these territories. Because then if we cannot go to the International Court of Justice, then we could go to the Court of World Opinion, because that's the only thing we can do to get the world on our side. And we have the ironclad evidence that we have a better right than anybody, China, Vietnam, Malaysia, and all the other countries. We have the best title. We have the best claim, because we follow international law. There's so many principles of international law we can use to say that we have the strongest claim. That's why we should challenge everybody to submit the territorial dispute to voluntary arbitration. Well, that's on the legal side. On the practical side, we should not give up our claim, because sea level rise by the end of the century will be 1 to 2 meters, and even higher than that beyond the century, and that will submerge all the islands in the spratlys. And once submerged, they will form part of our exclusive economic zone if within 200 nautical miles. So all we have to do is to hang on to our claim. Never give up our claim, because everything will be underwater in that area by the end of the century and beyond because of sea level rise.
Okay, Justice, you mentioned the need to court public opinion, world opinion. Many have noticed that the Philippine government has actually been more assertive lately in terms of courting that opinion. The Coast Guard, the Navy have been sharing a video of what's going on there in the maritime world, the harassment by Chinese vessels, etc., bringing the media, foreign journalists to these areas, etc. What else can the government do? And ano ba yung options ngayon ng Marcos administration?
Well, the template is there. We follow what Malaysia and Indonesia did. Malaysia depends on oil and gas exports to fuel its economy, and their reserves have gone down, so they decided to open new wells. They sent their drill and survey ship to their exclusive economic zone, but within the 9-dash line. The Chinese said, you cannot do that. That's within the 9-dash line. There will be war. But they still proceeded. They sent their survey and drill ship, and accompanied by their Navy and Coast Guard, and at the same time, the U.S., and Australia conducted naval drills in the same area. So the Chinese Coast Guard couldn't do anything. So the Malaysians were successful. And that's why Anwar Ibrahim said recently, we don't have a problem with China on the South China Sea because they are getting the gas. Even if China does not recognize their exclusive economic zone, as long as they are getting the oil and gas, they are winning. Because at bottom, the exclusive economic zone is about how you can exploit the natural resources in the exclusive economic zone. So Malaysia is happy because they are getting the oil and gas despite the threats of China. Indonesia did the same. Indonesia wanted to survey and drill in the Natunas, but it fell within the nine dash line of China. And China said, you cannot do that. There will be war. But Indonesia sent its survey and drill ship to the Natunas, accompanied by its navy. At the same time, the U.S. sent its aircraft carrier, the Ronald Reagan, in the same area. So the Chinese couldn't do anything. So Indonesia completed its survey and drilling. We should do the same in Reed Bank because the template is there. And we have a mutual defense treaty with the U.S. And the U.S. said, yes, we're happy to accompany you to Reed Bank. So it requires only political will. During the time of Duterte, of course, he said, no, he intimidated us on behalf of China that there will be massacre if we do that. And so we did not set our survey and drill ship. But Malaysia did, Indonesia did, and they succeeded. So we just have to follow that. There's the template already on how to get your gas. It doesn't matter that China doesn't recognize our EEZ because at bottom, the EEZ about the use of the natural resources, the oil and gas. If we can get the oil and gas, even if China doesn't agree, then we're winning. That's it.
So, Justice, you've also suggested building civilian structures such as lighthouses or a research center so that we can file a complaint to UNCLOS in case China shows us aggression again. No, explain to us the logic of that. Because right now what's going on are military activities and not civilian. Therefore, they're not covered by UNCLOS. Tama ba yon, Justice?
Yes, that's correct. When we filed the arbitration against China in 2012, we included that. We asked the tribunal to direct China to stop harassing us every time we send a resupply to BRP Sierra Madre. And the tribunal said, we cannot order China to stop harassing you because that's a military activity. And military activity are excluded because China in the reservation, and that's allowed, said that we will not be subjected to a compulsory arbitration on matters involving military activities and on matters involving overlapping exclusive economic zones. So that's allowed. So the tribunal refused to order China to stop harassing us whenever we resupply Sierra Madre. So what we should do is to put up a civilian structure, like a lighthouse operated by the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is civilian, so that if China stops us from building that structure, a lighthouse, or stop us from resupplying that lighthouse with the Marine Research Center, we can go to the tribunal and pile up these judgments against China. So that's the way out of that dilemma, that we are being harassed by China, but there is no tribunal to go to.
Okay, why is China so intent on expanding their territory at other nations' expense and at the expense of China's own reputation? Ano ba yung big picture dito, Justice? I mean, China is also risking a lot, no, by doing all of this, no? Parang they are offending us, threatening many other countries. They feel threatened by China's actions. Bakit ba ginagawa ito ng China in the first place?
Unang bahagi pa lang yan ng ating panayam kay former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. Tune in tomorrow for part 2.